from deep inside your radio. This week from Northfield, New Jersey, ladies and gentlemen, ironically enough, in South New Jersey, you figure it out, but very near Atlantic City, the casino tour is this weekend. And you got to say, when you visit all the new casinos, Americans really are overtaxed. We need more money to pour into slots. I love the clarity of vision of somebody who was working backstage at one of the... www.unwigged.com. We're coming to Chicago, Detroit, and Milwaukee this week. Sold out in New York. But one of the people working backstage at one of the casino showrooms said, with, as I say, great perspicacity and candor, "Well, we didn't build this place off the money of winners." Atlantic City, nearby, is a community where the few people that I've met here already have, with sort of a mix of rue and cockeyed pride, people have reported that, yes, a goodly number of the string of former mayors, recent and former mayors of Atlantic City, have been jailed or otherwise ensnared in corruption investigations. So I sure hope the levees don't break around here. You know, you don't get that federal aid if you've been corrupt. We've learned that. I want to welcome a new station to the ever-growing Le Show Network, WKCC, in Kankakee, Illinois. I've dreamed of being on the air in Kankakee, and now that dream has come true. But on the other hand, also in the housekeeping department, there is this issue now brought to my attention by several listeners this past week that the... It's too complicated to go into here, but suffice to say that the version that you download if you go to harryshear.com or kciw.com is now the truncated version that is available in the podcast. If you like that, let me know. If you don't like that, let me know. I have to get into an argument. And I'm sitting here in a fabulously appointed studio, except for the fact that the engineer, Chris Coleman, told me before we went on the air, put the headphones on. You want to get used to this. It sounds either like I have tinnitus or like I'm in an ear exam that never ends. But he said, oh, they won't hear it. So that makes me feel even crazier. Ladies and gentlemen, what the Sunday Yakkers didn't mention today. I may be instituting a new feature because it's, you may recall last week's show, I pointed out that people were debating, should these interrogation photos be released or not, while on that very same weekend, an Australian newspaper had published 60 of them, the same photos that had been leaked already. A fact which, aside from Frank Rich's column, never made it, forget about the Sunday Yak shows, never made it into the mainstream media at all. 60 of the 2,000 interrogation photos leaked so far. But, you know, we got to argue. Then this week, the liberal and the conservative on at least one show were debating, the policies about closing the problems about closing Guantanamo. And, you know, do we want those people in America? Like Harry Reid says, never, not on my watch. Okay, how about on your wallet? And neither the liberal nor the conservative happened to mention that a lot of these people, as you've heard on this broadcast over time, the Uyghurs from China, Osama's driver, the people whom judges have now released or ordered to be released from Guantanamo because the, quote, evidence against them mainly came from psychotics, they weren't the worst of the worst in many cases. So now Newt Gingrich used this figure that was published in a New York Times story this week, based on a Pentagon press release, that 1 in 7 of the released detainees from Guantanamo had gone back to the battlefield, a claim that was then later changed on the Times' website when they realized there was no evidence that these people had been on the battlefield in the first place. They had gone, perhaps, to the battlefield after being released from Guantanamo. But the question not mentioned by any of the Sunday Actors is, okay, you're innocent, you're kept in Guantanamo for 7 years, you're messed around with, and if only one in seven of you are angry enough at the United States to want to do something nasty to us, that's a pretty good batting average. So, not mentioned. They're not necessarily the worst of the worst, as far as from what we know now. But, you know, if you knew what Dick Cheney knew, I guess you'd marry Lynn. And now, ladies and gentlemen, Tales of Airport Security. This comes from someone who says, name withheld for obvious reasons. Dear Harry, on a recent trip, my luggage was pulled from the conveyor by TSA. They removed my toiletry kit. They pulled me aside, and the TSA agent pulled an unmarked bottle from my kit, my moisturizer, and told me it looked like more than 3 ounces. He threw it away. He then removed other bottles and told me it was against regulations to carry on unmarked bottles and that only original product bottles were allowed. He told me that's how they know what's in them. He then told me my baggie was too big, that it looked to him like it was a gallon bag. He held it up to show me. Clearly across the top of the bag, it read, 1 quart, printed in big white letters. Everything he rifled through, the baggie and bottles, which was purchased at my company store under a sign that read, TSA-approved toiletry kits. I work for an airline. Has he won his name withheld, do you think? Tales of Airport Security, ladies and gentlemen, a copyrighted feature of Hello, Welcome to the Show.
Talking to myself just like I'd lost my mind. I can't remember rowing towards the moon upon a single beam, but it must have happened. Yeah, it must have happened. Can't remember learning how to laugh at catastrophe. I remember losing track of who I was supposed to be. I can't remember riding flying horses toward the golden ring, but it must have happened. Yes, it must have happened. Remember looking for something so hard to find. I can't remember talking to myself just like I'd lost my mind. I can't remember rowing towards the moon upon a single beam, but it must have happened. Yeah, it must have happened. Can't remember learning how to laugh at the time.
catastrophe. I can't remember losing track of who I was supposed to be. I can't remember riding flying horses toward the golden ring, but it must have happened. Yes, it must have happened. Seeing all my hopes going up in flames. I can't remember reaching for the closest thing to dull the pain. I can't remember feeling I could be healed by a stranger's hand, but it must have happened. Yes, it must have happened. Looking for omens, hoping there was gonna be a sign. Can't remember figuring out the secret was inside me all this time. I can't remember walking without fear towards the light you shine, but it must have happened. Yeah, it must have happened. Must have happened, darling, before it happened.
My bad, from Northfield, New Jersey, home of whatever is here. I'm Harry Shearer, welcoming you to this edition of the show. Well, let's take a look, ladies and gentlemen, at three of my favorite federal operations. First of all, nuclear cleanup. It's going well. They're getting a lot of money in the stimulus package. That's right, nothing for New Orleans, but a private company was being paid $300 million by the federal government to clean up radioactive wastes at two abandoned plants in Tennessee when an iron worker crashed through a rusted floor. That prompted a major safety review, never too late, which ended up forcing work to an abrupt halt. The project was shut down for months. The delay cost estimates to rise, eventually hitting $781 million. Now the stimulus package is opening a new stream of funding, and the same contractor, Bechtel Jacobs, is getting another $118 million to help complete the job. The Energy Department has begun releasing, this according to the Washington Post, more than $6 billion in stimulus money to clean up 18 nuclear sites from New York to California. More than doubling the yearly annual the annual funding for the program. And who helped design the package in the stimulus package to give the money to the contractors? The contractors, including many that have been cited for serious safety violations and costly mistakes. I know it sounds like the Bush administration. The contracts have prompted rare, sharply worded warnings from some government officials and lawmakers who say the stimulus funding is ripe for abuse. This, along with much broader problems in the nuclear cleanup program. It's long been plagued by cost overruns and delays and is designated by the Government Accountability Office as, quote, at high risk for fraud, waste, abuse, and mismanagement. All right. See? Career opportunity right there. kids. Over the past 2 years, estimated cleanup costs at all 22 sites have risen from $180 billion to $240 billion, according to the Energy Department. That's over 2 years it rose that much. The very contract, okay. Energy Department officials as well as the contractors point out that nuclear cleanup work is exceedingly complex. It's hard work. We've heard that. And that some problems have been unavoidable. Private contractors do all the cleanup work at the Energy Department project to clean up our nuclear weapons sites. I guess the government doesn't have any people who know how to do that. And they've been involved from the beginning in shaping their piece of the stimulus. In December, when it became clear that Obama would introduce a huge spending bill to create jobs, Energy Department staff members began meeting with the contractors. They helped devise a $6.4 billion plan. It's already clear that many of the same contractors whose problems have been noted in dozens of GAO and Inspector General reports are once more in line for federal money. In New Mexico, the company involved there will get at least $100 million to manage and operate a disposal site, despite safety violations that forced repeated closures and put the work behind schedule. Company officials have refused to comment. No contractors have lost jobs for poor performance during the past 4 years. If contractors don't perform well in the stimulus program, says a government spokesperson, we believe we will be very demanding customers. A central concern is that to secure the huge funding increase, department officials of the Department of Energy promised to accelerate the work. Some of the most notable mishaps took place under the two prior administrations because of accelerated plans. But nothing for New Orleans. And the CIA, embroiled in that argument with Nancy Pelosi over briefings, was found this week by the Associated Press to have made more errors in its list of briefings. The CIA has acknowledged one of the errors, continues to stand by its version of events in two other cases. The CIA chart says a Senate staffer, Chris Mellon, attended a briefing on July 15, 2004. Mellon told the Associated Press he left the Senate in April of that year and did not attend the briefing. CIA says he's right. CIA also reported that Senator Jay Rockefeller, the top Democrat on the Senate Intelligence Committee back then, was briefed on February 4, 2003, but it says he received a later individual briefing. Rockefeller's spokesperson says the senator was not briefed until September 4 of that year. The CIA spokesman says the chart plainly indicates he wasn't there and was to be briefed individually later. The chart makes no claim as to if or when that briefing occurred. The CIA chart also shows former House Intelligence Committee Chairman Porter Goss attended a March 8, 2005 briefing as a member of Congress, when in fact Goss was at that time filling a job in the executive branch, not in Congress. What job? Head of the CIA. But I'm not saying they lied, because Republicans would get after me for that. Republicans, by the way, have never said the CIA lied or misled anybody, at least not since the National Intelligence Estimate in 2007 said that Iran was not pursuing a nuclear weapons program. That's the last time they said that. And then there's the Army Corps of Engineers. There's a new campaign, allegedly, of censorship and retaliation by the Army Corps directed against whistleblower Bunateen Bunny Greenhouse. Greenhouse blew the whistle on non-competitive Iraq contracts let by the Bush administration in 2003, specifically contracts tied to Halliburton. At that time, she was the top civilian procurement officer at the Army Corps. Within hours of testifying recently in Congress, she received an email from the Army Corps chief of staff demanding preclearance of any further testimony she may wish to present to Congress. She was testifying before a committee about legislation aimed at protecting whistleblowers. She was invited to speak in her personal capacity as the senior official at the Army Corps to blow the whistle on Iraq war contracting. And and FEMA, just to complete the quadfecta, is now saying those people in New Orleans who are still living in trailers have to get out, have to get out. Why they're still in trailers? The FEMA has says, well, we've extended the deadline. Now it's time to stop extending the deadline. Why are they still in trailers? Well, because they're living in trailers in the front yards of the houses that they're redoing. And if you've ever had a job with a contractor and given him a deadline to, like, fix up your house, you know how those deadlines work. So basically FEMA is saying, get out of your trailer, move somewhere else, far away from where your house is that you're fixing, because we said you got to. F, ladies and gentlemen, is indeed for FEMA. And now...
High def, low def, no def, take my hand. It's a digital wonderland. Got to be so careful where you stand in the digital wonderland.
Yes, it's exciting. To view Public Broadcasting System affiliate WUSF of Tampa, Florida, cable customers in Sarasota and Charlotte counties must now subscribe to a service that costs three times more than basic cable. Comcast has chosen to engage in a national move to trim back public broadcasting stations from its basic package in areas where there is service from more than one PBS station. They did this across the nation, says a Comcast spokesperson, so don't feel picked on, Florida. It's a digital wonderland. And now...
He's not a general.
He commands no troops.
He's not an inspector.
He peeks at no stoops.
He's an
inspector general. Oh, yeah.
The aforementioned inspectors general deliver their reports this week. The person responsible for a $404 million reconstruction contract in Afghanistan sits nine time zones away in suburban Maryland and is unable to provide adequate oversight as to where all the money is going, according to a new government report. The audit suggests the U.S. is confronting the same kinds of problems in Afghanistan as it did in Iraq, where billions of dollars were unaccounted for during 6 years of reconstruction there, and has little plan yet to address the problems. The Special Inspector General for Afghanistan Reconstruction, the SIGAR, that's the acronym, don't blame me, has released its first audit of reconstruction work in Afghanistan, focusing on a single $404 million contract left by the American command responsible for training Afghan security forces. That would be important. The auditors discovered the sole person overseeing the massive contract cannot provide the proper oversight because the individual is not in Afghanistan, but instead works in Maryland. Recognizing the problems inherent in overseeing such a massive contract far away from work actually being done, the contracting officer hired a subordinate to work in Afghanistan. Said subordinate has limited contracting experience and is not able to visit many of the actual work sites where the work is performed under the contract because of other duties. The U.S. has spent more than $32 billion on reconstruction, stabilization, and development activities in Afghanistan since 2001, half spent by the Pentagon, and of that, $15 billion to provide security assistance to the Afghan army. Although U.S. has been spending for a while, since 2001, the Special Inspector General for Afghanistan was established just last year. Never too late. The first audit suggests the issue in Afghanistan seems to be there simply isn't enough capacity or money to hire enough people to oversee all the work being done, partly because of security problems. Where have we heard that? The Special Inspector General for Afghanistan, Arnold Fields, a retired Marine general, struggled to answer questions about the contract or how many other contracts exist under the training command. He acknowledges his staff's ability to conduct oversight is still weak. This is not a surprise to me because I try not to be surprised, he said. It's a reflection of the dynamics of reconstruction, not unlike those we've seen in Iraq, where it takes an abundance of funds and considerable numbers of people to ensure the taxpayer dollar is being used for the purposes for which it was appropriated. Well, it ain't deja vu if it doesn't happen again. The National Archives lost a computer hard drive containing massive amounts of sensitive data from the Clinton administration, including Social Security numbers, addresses, and Secret Service and White House operating procedures, according to a congressional inspector, a congressional committee briefed by the Inspector General of the National Archives and Records Administration. One of former Vice President Gore's three daughters is among those whose Social Security numbers were on the drive. It's not clear which daughter. It's a Gore daughter. Other information includes logs of events, social gatherings, and political records. The agency is preparing to notify affected individuals of the breach, including former President Clinton. The drive contains an as-yet-unknown amount of personally identifiable information of White House staff and visitors. The FBI is currently conducting a criminal investigation of the matter. The drive was lost between last October and this March. It contained 1 terabyte of data. The archives have been converting the Clinton records to digital when the hard drive went missing. It was left on a shelf and unused for a certain period of time. When employees tried to resume work, the hard drive wasn't there anymore. It's digital. It's digital. And the IRS should be doing a better job of ensuring that the sensitive personal and financial information on taxpayers' paper documents doesn't fall into the wrong hands, according to the Treasury Department's Inspector General. Yes, it should. Don't you think? Isn't that its job? The IG found the IRS needed to improve oversight of contractors who collect, dispose, and destroy paper documents containing sensitive but unclassified information. Regional IRS officials did not regularly visit with contractors to verify that the trash was properly destroyed. I tell you, you might have to hire some people to do government work that work for the government. News from Inspectors General, ladies and gentlemen, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast.
She puts a crop.
This is Le Show. And ladies and gentlemen, the formaldehyde industry is fighting back. The Formaldehyde Council has issued an open letter to journalists on behalf of the formaldehyde industry. Now, formaldehyde, you may know, was that substance. It's found in a lot of furniture, and it was the gas that was found to be leaking in the travel trailers that were supplied to the people who are now being evicted from them down New Orleans way. It's found in a lot of office furniture, carpeting. Yeah. But normally these things are outgassed, is the preferred term. It's the term of art. Outgassed. Let's go outgassing today. What do you say? It's a good day for outgassing before they're sold to the public. That's what didn't happen with the travel trailers. Anyway, bad publicity for the formaldehyde industry, and a lot of stuff coming from China has been found to have baby clothes. And anyway, the formaldehyde industry has had enough. Quote, over the last year, there's been a trend of erroneous and slanted stories about the use of formaldehyde in consumer and industrial applications. The falsehoods are often pushed by activist groups with a hidden financial or ideological agenda. The Formaldehyde Council Incorporated, a nonprofit association who represents the companies that produce formaldehyde for profit, is urging reporters to apply strict standards of accuracy, objectivity, and sourcing on these issues. And then they list a number of things that they complain about, like news stories that describe household products that are formaldehyde-free as healthier, although that is scientifically and medically unproven. Readers and viewers deserve the truth, says the Formaldehyde Council. When activists are pushing bad science, they should be exposed, not showcased. We want an open dialogue with journalists because we believe it will support the balanced and objective reporting that journalists seek generally, and particularly important when informing the public about their health. We would like to offer some facts about formaldehyde. Knowledgeable scientists familiar with the vast research database agree that at the low levels of formaldehyde to which people are normally exposed, either through internal or external sources, there is essentially no risk. Only two weasel words in that paragraph, normally and essentially. Formaldehyde is one of the most studied substances in existence. That's why they use it, an embalming fluid, ladies and gentlemen. It occurs naturally in the air we breathe, we produce it internally, and it does not accumulate in the environment or in plants, animals, or people. Formaldehyde is a necessary, commonplace building block essential ingredient for making thousands of essential materials used in consumer, automotive, construction, and defense applications. You're against formaldehyde, you're against keeping the country safe. We encourage your feedback. You've just had it. The Formaldehyde Council, ladies and gentlemen, weighing in on this week's Le Show. I was in Canada. Yes, this tour has taken me not only to casinos, but to Canada. Think of it. And I was in Toronto this week. Remember the last time I was in Toronto? And my discovery was that, it's a mark of how, after you think you can't get any more skeptical, something happens to say, no, you still believe something. The investment firm in this country that says something about bragging about independence is the way we do these things that we do. Independence, kind of an American phrase, kind of a U.S. phrase, kind of a talismanic U.S. phrase. The company is TD Ameritrade. They could put America in the name of the company, Ameritrade. But what's the TD? Toronto Dominion. It's a Canadian company. Anyway, that was what I discovered last time. This time I discovered in the pages of the Toronto Globe and Mail, and yes, that's how they call it, Toronto, that there's a new salmon about to be approved by the United States Food and Drug Administration. At least it's up for approval. It's no ordinary fish that Aqua Bounty Technologies has produced, tweaked with genetic material from Chinook salmon, and an eel-like creature called an ocean pout. It reaches... Now, why would you want to do something like that? Better taste? More nutrition in your salmon? It reaches market size twice as fast as normal Atlantic salmon. Aqua Bounty has spent more than a decade chasing U.S. regulatory approval. U.S. Food and Drug Administration officials have reportedly said it's coming soon. If it does, Canada can't keep the fish out because of World Trade Organization things, so they're there goes the salmon. Just to get it to market sooner, because we're in such a hurry. Now, yes, we're looking back. Me, personally, I see no reason to look forward. I see the same stuff each way. For a while now, it's been clear that Abu Zubaydah was tortured well before the Justice Department issued its first approval in first opinion approving enhanced interrogation techniques. So how did the CIA, which always likes to cover its behind, get approval for waterboarding Abu Zubaydah 83 times? By the way, reliable reporting indicates they got nothing out of him. Anyway, one source with knowledge of Zubaydah's interrogations agreed to describe the legal guidance process on the condition of anonymity. The source says nearly every day, the CIA contractor, James Mitchell, now I'll stop for a minute to point out, this was a guy who had, with a partner, mastered the techniques that we were teaching our own troops to protect them from if they get tortured. This was the so-called SERE program, S-E-R-E. James Mitchell, knowing the program, yet had never actually done any interrogating when he was hired as a contractor by the CIA to run the interrogation program of Abu Zubaydah. Every day now, getting back to James Mitchell, he would sit at his computer and write a top-secret cable to the CIA's counterterrorism center. Each day he would request permission for the interrogators to use enhanced techniques on Zubaydah. The source says the CIA would then forward the request to the White House, where it would be signed off on by White House counsel Alberto Gonzalez. That would provide the administration's legal blessing for Mitchell to okay the increasing of pressure on Zubaydah. The White House directly signed on the techniques in the person of Alberto Gonzalez. NPR says a new document is consistent with the source's account. And as a White House counsel at the time who wasn't involved in the issue says to NPR, ordinarily the White House counsel's office is not in the business of providing advice to anyone outside the White House itself, except for Alberto Gonzalez.
I was loyal to George Bush whenever he'd call, even if he wanted nothing at all. I was loyal on the rise, I was loyal on the fall, 'cause even I know what the point of the fall is. Give the critics the head of Alberto Gonzalez. The Geneva Conventions redefined, calling them quaint. I think that quote was mine, 'cause certain detainees were just over the line. In the room with top lawyers, it's clear where the gall is. In the legalese head of Alberto Gonzalez. Was a badge I'd wear with pride. It got me upstairs and it got me inside. In Texas, George Bush named me to his Supreme Court. Could the big one be next? I'd sure need his support. So my advice was the most approving sort. If I wanted the robe, I'd give nothing but solace and let Bush be the head of Alberto Gonzalez. We wanted wanted to change prosecutors for friends. A big Senate hearing is where that trail ends. The truth doesn't break, but it certainly bends. I gave a display of what total lack of recall is. Just a memory hole in the head of Alberto Gonzalez. Was a badge I'd wear with pride. It got me upstairs and it got me inside. I'll spend time with my family. I'll spend time alone. I'll sit by my computer. I'll sit by my phone, hoping that my old friend will just throw me a bone. Even though I know how unlikely that call is, so I'll take back the head of Alberto Gonzalez.
There's a girl in silver heels. There's a jukebox playing uptight and a scally selling wheels. She brushes up against a boy like a puppy dog in spring. He turns to her, he loves her lips, her tattoos and a ring. Here's a pound towards the next drink. Here's a diamond for your ears. To what the other girls sing, will you dance me out of here? Here's a kiss to last till later. Here's a number on your palm. Here's a later alligator in blue ink across my arm. Lady Luck seems to be waltzing with the dealer. It's love at first tequila. She crawls the streets of Camden like a lizard stalks a rock, chasing all the gigs her pride is under key of lock. She sings to feed her babies hand to mouth and mouth to mouth. But when she sings Pedido, they'll be dancing in the aisle. Here's a pound towards the next drink. Here's a diamond for your ears. To what the other girls sing, will you dance me out of here? Here's a kiss to last till later. Here's a number on your palm. Here's a later alligator in blue ink across my arm. Lady Luck seems to be waltzing with the dealer. But it's love at first tequila. Back down the black gardenia, shiny horn tied in a sack. Braving nose and maybes, keeping face from crock and crack. His family's on the far side of the wrong side of the tracks. Keeping out the hungry wolves, here's a slam to relax. Here's a pound towards the next drink. Here's a diamond for your ears. To what the other girls think, will you dance me out of here? Here's a kiss to last till later. Here's a number on your arm. Here's a later alligator. Take my loving, take my arm. Lady Luck seems to be waltzing with the dealer. It's love at first tequila. They make love to movement starlight, and the secret's theirs to keep. She doesn't want this one to end, so she pins him to the floor. She shows the boy the sharp end of a knife she's used before. Here's a pound towards the next drink. Here's a diamond for your ears. To what the other girls think, will you dance me out of here? Here's a kiss to last till later. Here's a number on your palm. Here's a later alligator in blue ink across my arm. Lady Luck seems to be waltzing with the dealer. It's love at first tequila.
tequila.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, the apologies of the week.
We're so sorry.
Good load of them this week. Sorry week. We start with Ireland. Thousands of children were physically and sexually abused by priests and nuns in orphanages and reform schools in Ireland from 1930 to 1990. A government commission said this week in the first official accounting of the full magnitude of the scandal that has wrenched the deeply Roman Catholic nation. The report capped the 9-year investigation. It said rape and sexual abuse were endemic in boys' institutions funded by the state but run by the church. A climate of fear created by pervasive, excessive, and arbitrary punishment permeated most of the institutions and all those run for boys. Says Cardinal Sean Brady, I am profoundly sorry and deeply ashamed. Children deserve better. Already worried about declining church attendance, many priests had warned parishioners in recent Sunday homilies that the report would shock us all. The commission said documents found at the Vatican showed that religious orders knew of numerous abuse complaints but covered them up, worried more about scandal than about protecting the children. The Christian Brothers manned many of the residential boys' homes in Ireland. More allegations were made against it than against all other male religious orders combined. They successfully sued the commission in 2004 to keep its members unnamed. And in the end, no priest or nun was named in the report. But they still make good wine, don't they? Again, Deadline London, the Speaker of Britain's House of Commons, Michael Martin, resigned his position under withering criticism of his handling of a growing scandal over politicians' expense accounts. It's the first time in 300 years that someone in that powerful position has been removed from office. Martin said, to the extent that I have contributed to the situation, I am profoundly sorry. From Alec Baldwin, I'd like to offer an apology. He wrote this on the Huffington Post, and a clarification. While in the David Letterman program, I joked that I might need a mail-order bride to achieve the goal of having more children in my life. I believe that most people understood that this was a joke and took it as such. However, I do apologize to anyone who took offense. The comments of some Philippine government officials come as no surprise to me either. Even the one by a former action film star turned senator who beckoned me to come to the Philippines so he could beat me over my comment. Such anger and frustration is understandable. The Philippines has suffered significant problems with the issue of sex trafficking. Learn of the important work this agency has done. I apologize for the perceived insensitivity of that remark and ask you to visit the site of people who are working to fight sex trafficking. Sincerely yours. A Michigan postal worker who had thousands of pieces of mail in a self-storage unit has been placed on probation for 2 years. Jill Hull pleaded guilty to deserting the mail 3 months ago. She said she couldn't keep up with her route. She apologized in federal court. Some of the mail had postmarks from 2005. Actor Kiefer Sutherland, back to celebrity apologies, and fashion designer Jack McCulloch, who were involved in a scuffle that occurred earlier this month in New York, have resolved their differences out of court. Sutherland has expressed his regret for the May 5 incident in which he allegedly headbutted the fashion designer when the latter accidentally bumped into actress Brooke Shields at a New York City gala. In an apology letter, the star of 24 said, I am sorry about what happened that night and sincerely regret that Mr. McCulloch was injured. McCulloch has accepted Sutherland's apology. That's nice. Takayoshi Maeda, principal of Senzoku Gakuen's junior and senior high schools, apologized this week for letting a group of students go to New York, where two of them contracted swine flu, but said he thought he lacked the authority to cancel the special trip. This was the mock model UN conference. About 2,600 students from about 100 countries. All six students wanted to go even though they knew the risk, Maeda told the Japan Times. While apologizing for the public anxiety the female students' illnesses have caused since testing positive for the flu Wednesday night. Hey, I'm going to New York this week. What the... Before the trip in Kawasaki, the school in Kawasaki, Japan, held a meeting with parents to confirm they wanted to let their children go to the U.S. All of them said yes. Okay, but he's sorry that they went. The boy says he didn't dare move as the teaching assistant brought scissors up to his hair. Then his locks fell away and tears soon followed. A seven-year-old's involuntary haircut at his elementary school in Thunder Bay, Ontario, Canada, has outraged his family and provoked accusations of intolerance toward the family's native heritage. The family's Toronto human rights lawyer says the boy was assaulted, and the National Chief of the Assembly of First Nations, Native American group in Canada, says the incident recalls the dehumanizing treatment of Native children in residential schools. They didn't steal them like they did in Australia. They just put them in fine schools. The boy was being supervised by a teacher's aide last month when he noticed the assistant kept looking at him. According to his mother, the teacher then walked up, stood the boy on a chair, and started cutting his bangs. The boy wears his hair long like his father and brother. The family takes part in traditional dancing and powwows. The boy's hair reached his chin, helped anchor a part of a hairdress. Headdress. The hair is a symbol of our strength, our heritage, and the culture of our family. She took it away from him, the boy's mother said. Our hair is who we are. Jewish people wear these cap things on their head. You have to respect that. It's the same thing. The school principal called her the next day to apologize and suspended the teacher's aide, calling it an unfortunate incident. The cap thing. It's the same thing. We all know each other so well, don't we? It's getting better all the time with radio and TV and the thing. The one California lawmaker has apparently not heard that the Irish don't run Boston anymore. Representative Mike Honda was campaigning for the mayoral campaign of his friend Sam Yoon in Washington, D.C. And Honda said, Boston has been waiting a long time because the Irish have had it. I would like to apologize for an insensitive remark I made at a recent event, Honda said in a written statement. In the spirit of supporting efforts to help elect Asian American and Pacific Islander candidates to office, I made an attempt at being humorous that unfortunately came out as a statement that was offensive. I did not mean to offend anyone or any community, and I deeply regret my comment. That's another example of humor by amateurs. American Airlines Flight 87 to Chicago was delayed at Heathrow Airport this week because it became clear the pilot was drunk. Airport's security staff were sufficiently concerned by the pilot's behavior to alert police as he was about to board the Boeing 777, where 204 passengers were waiting to cross the Atlantic. American Airlines said a pilot was arrested at Heathrow, having failed a breathalyzer test. Our primary concern is for the safety and comfort of our passengers. I've flown American. Employees are not allowed to have alcohol while on duty. We apologize. Okay. The leader of Atlanta's police union apologized for telling city council members that he sometimes wants to beat Mayor Shirley Franklin in the head with a baseball bat when he thinks about problems disabled officers have getting workers' compensation. I certainly apologize to the mayor for the comment I made. It was directed at the anger myself and fellow officers are struggling with. British soul singer Amy Winehouse, no, say it's not true, has disappointed fans again, announcing the cancellation of a comeback concert scheduled for the end of this month. In a statement released by her management, she apologized to fans who already purchased tickets and said she regretted the fact that she could not perform. She has been hospitalized on St. Lucia, the island of St. Lucia, where she's working on a record. Dropping an F-bomb on the air has gotten a popular South Florida radio talk show host kicked off the air for now. Neil Rogers, who does his show on WQAM, admits he said the F-word during his show, but he never intended it for it to go out of the air. He'd been upset after longtime producer and friend Jorge Rodriguez had been let go by the station's manager, Joe Bell. Near the end of the show, Rogers said he uttered the phrase, F Joe Bell. He said he immediately hit a dump button three times after he said it. That takes you off the air using the seven-second delay. But unbeknownst to Rogers at the time, he said the word the dump button was within his reach was not working because the station had just moved into new studios. Lance Armstrong was apologetic and avoided launching into a verbal war with race organizers following the protest that marred the ninth stage of the Giro d'Italia. It's an unfortunate situation, Armstrong said in a video message. He was seen discussing the perils of the circuit with the race organization's car as he pedaled through Milan. I think the real point here, and I think the point we as writers would like to get across, is that we're sorry. It wasn't an ideal outcome. We didn't feel conditions were safe. The Jamaican Prime Minister has apologized to six Canadian tourists whose minivan was shot at while driving in inner-city Kingston this week. A 750-pound woman in Indianapolis who died in her bed was covered with a carpet and pulled out of her apartment on the mattress in view of neighbors, then hoisted onto a flatbed wrecker to be taken to the county morgue. County Coroner Frank Lloyd says he's investigating, but he's sorry. A day after calling American Idol contestant Adam Lambert contrived, awful, and slightly frightening on his blog, Clay Aiken, a former American Idol contestant, has apologized on the very same blog. The apologies of the week, ladies and gentlemen, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. We had Ralph the Talking Computer standing by to read some of Larry King's things from Twitter. We're going to take a rain check on Ralph and invite him back here next week. He's a talking computer. He'll come wherever I tell him to. My thanks to WKCC Kankakee for adding the show, and to the general manager, the real Mike Savage, for adding the show. That's going to conclude this week's edition of the show. The program returns next week at the same time over these same stations over NPR worldwide throughout Europe. On the USN 440 cable system in Japan, around the world through the facilities of the American Forces Network, up and down the east coast of North America via the shortwave giant WBCQ, the planet, 7.415 megahertz shortwave. On the mighty 104 in Berlin, around the world via the internet at two different locations, live and archived wherever you want at harryshearer.com and kcrw.com. And still available streaming at NPR stations that carry this broadcast throughout the day. Find them at publicradiofan.com. We're also available on your smartphone via Stitcher.com, available as a free download to members at www.audible.com, and available as a free podcast, truncated though it is, at kcrw.com. And it'd be just like not being truncated if you'd agree to join me in the end, would you? Alrighty, thank you very much. A tip of the show, chapeau to the San Diego, Pittsburgh, Chicago, and Hawaii desks for helping to make today's show possible. Same to Chris Coleman here at Millennium Radio in Northfield, South New Jersey. The email address for this broadcast and playlist of the music heard hereon is always available at the always evolving harryshearer.com. And thanks, as always, to Pam Halstead. The show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of KCRW Santa Monica, a community recognized around the world as the home of the homeless.